I am a prison abolitionist. Prisons have no place in a civilized society. How do we do without prisons? We change this society. And that this fucking society. We change it. And that's the only way we cannot have prisons. We don't need to put up with this. So anybody that wants to see the agreement to end hostilities, if you haven't read it, it's here. Then the guys in the short corridor came up with 3 points that they want people to get behind. Develop a campaign to promote the end of hostilities. Wow. If you had an end of hostilities, you would take away their tool. Mm-hmm. And if one of you guys said it, that is, they depend on this. If they don't have people fighting each other, it's all over for them. Second, they want to have a powerful media campaign to expose how CDC has retaliated against the hunger strikers. They gave them good food for a minute, now they got slop again. They have retaliated against them so bad for standing up for their rights, for saying, I won't eat. How is that hurting anybody? And third, they want to have a day each month that is Prisoner Rights Day, and that's not a bad idea.
Okay, that's Jerry Silver talking about the prison hunger strike. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we're going to talk about an issue that is very controversial in the black community, and that's same-sex marriage. And I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Bishop Terry Angel Mason. He is a Pulitzer Prize-nominated author, activist, and poet. He's an openly gay Christian minister, LGBT civil rights activist, and national HIV/AIDS awareness spokesman. Angel, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you, Melvin. It's a pleasure to be back here.
Yes. Let's start off with, can you tell our listening audience a little about your background, and then when did you become a minister?
Well, I was actually called into ministry at 8 years of age. Or when I was eight, I actually knew emphatically, had a witness in my spirit as an eight-year-old child that I was called into ministry at that time. I actually really believed I was called at five. But at eight, I was conscious and old enough to understand what that calling meant, and I joyfully accepted it. As I grew up, though, Melvin, I grew, of course, I was still going to church. I was in choirs because I'm also a singer and composer even to this day. Mm-hmm. And I majored in music in school and sociology. But while I was growing up, I observed ministers. And I kind of began to say, you know, Lord, I teach in churches, preach in churches, but I don't want a pastor. because to me church members in churches kill pastors. I literally said, Lord, I kind of actually begin to move away from that calling. I begin to somewhat to reject it. Mm-hmm. And but I made an agreement with God. I'll do music, I will speak, I will teach. But I will not pastor. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of closed the door in my mind to that. Mm-hmm. I went to Pepperdine University, and of course I became a double major. But at Pepperdine, you were required to take almost all the same classes as those who are training for ministry, Pepperdine Malibu. And of course, when I got to, I think, about, I was in my 40s, I'm in 56, but that's our secret. I finally kind of gave in to the Lord and said, okay, I'll do it. I pastored there in San Diego for several years. Now, what I do here, I trained ministers who took that ministry over for me. Now I have a wonderful job, which is that I train ministers in the United States nationally, and I train a goodly amount of ministers in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Now, before we get into an in-depth discussion about same-sex marriage, can you just update our audience on and explain exactly what Proposition 8 is? Just a little history on that.
Well, I think we pretty much all know, but I will go back just a little bit to talk about this. Of course, we know round about the time my first book came out, which is Love Won't Let Me Be Silent, Proposition 8 was being voted on, which would have had it. Okay, now this is kind of strange because this is part of the reason why the proposition failed. Because yes meant no, and no meant yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult. So, and let me explain what I mean by that. When I said the proposition succeeded, I mean succeeded in the sense that it was voted down by voters, then the LGBT community would have been able to marry. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't voted down by voters, then it would be a ban on same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. Or it would allow the ban that currently existed, I think, before Prop 22, if I have this correct, to remain in place. Part of the reason Prop 8 lost, as I stated in my first book, isn't necessarily because the voters didn't want same-sex unions. I was standing on a corner, and I tell this on every television station that I go on. There's a young man standing next to him, and he goes, "Oh, I recognize you. I saw you on television." And so we start talking. And he said, "I voted," what did he say? "Yes, on Prop 8.
And he didn't understand.
No. he was saying that he was for same-sex unions. But the language of it was so ambiguous, it was reversed. Mm-hmm. And I ran into countless people who thought that. Now, of course, the Mormon Church came into the African-American community. I think I mentioned this the last time. They engaged the Catholic Church. They engage African-American evangelicals, conservative ministers. They poured over $100 million, even though they said it was only $65 million. They lied. And mm-hmm. later, of course, that came out. And by the way, they got in trouble for that. And they, you know, told the lie that if we allow same-sex couples to marry, it's going to destroy the family unit. The wrath of God is going to come down on our nation. You know, mm-hmm. the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And So the ministers, of course, all got in that. And of course, you know, the outcome was mm-hmm. it, you know, it passed. But, of course, the Supreme Court overturned it. And really, that is, we see that same thing going now across the nation. Mm-hmm. Every state now where same-sex unions are not legal, every state that has a ban is now being sued.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to get into that a little deeper later on. But look, let me ask you this. Now, is same-sex marriage a violation of the Christian faith? Can you talk about that for a while and make our audience mm-hmm. understand that?
Well, see, the Bible talks about covenants, and marriage is a covenant. But anyone that understands the Bible understands that that's not the only covenant mentioned in the Bible. David and Jonathan had a covenant, and if you read their story, it would blow your mind. There is one particular point in the story at when Jonathan has, of course, been killed, where David gets up and he's weeping and he's saying, "Oh, Jonathan, I loved you. My love for you was more stronger than that of a woman." And and of course, as you look at their very intimate love relationship, you see affirming all through the relationship of love. And so there are different covenants. Jewish people understand this more, I think, than Christians do. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting married in September, for example, and my wedding invitations will say you are invited to a covenant of love. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to have a heterosexual marriage. I'm not a heterosexual man. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get over, and I'm a believer. So I'm trying to get over to those who are invited that you are coming to a covenant, a celebration of love. While it may not mirror what heterosexuals are doing, it is still valid in the eyes of God. This is where the confusion comes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you see in the Christian church them thinking that marriage is the only type of covenant that the Bible talks of, and it is not.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. What do you see as a major problem the black community have with same-sex marriage?
Wow, Melvin, we could be here all night with that. Gosh, the list is longer than my arm. I'll try to summarize this quickly. First of all, this goes way back to slavery. And you've got to understand, when Africans were brought to America, the slave owners wanted to gain psychological and physical control over slaves. They purposely removed the male from the family because they knew they could see how much the children and the wife honored, notice, and I use that word on purpose, honored, respected, and followed the leadership of the male in that house.
Mm-hmm.
They knew as long as that male was in the family unit that they could not gain the type of control over him or the wife or the children. So they removed him. And through the centuries all the way up till today, there has been this castration in the African-American community of the male machismo image. Mm-hmm. This is one reason why hip-hop was so well embraced. Because it bought, recaptured the urban masculine, you know, whole male machismo image, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people in the African-American community, sad to say, and it is out of ignorance, think that same-sex are people who have are same-gender loving people. Somehow got infected by the white community. There are no African Americans, no African gay people, and that's certainly not true, because let me tell you, I speak to them by the thousands literally every day, literally. Mm-hmm. And so African Americans think it threatens their they feel that they're masculine, what a man is, that there's something psychologically wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know we've dealt with the religious aspects. Many African Americans were very deeply rooted in Christianity, as am I. And mm-hmm. so all of these things appear to oppose their whole heritage.
Well, let me ask you this, because I come out of that same tradition. You know, my father was a Baptist minister down in Greenville, Mississippi. As a matter of fact, I was ordained myself in 1980
wow.
as a Baptist
wow.
minister a long time ago.
Wow.
And it seems like, gays have always been a central part of the black church. It was almost like a what they used to have in the military,
yeah.
the don't ask, don't tell type
same thing.
But and then they never dealt with the whole situation of same-sex marriage is a new phenomenon that have entered the black church. It was where is that now? You
right.
know, they just didn't deal with that. But I hope we get a chance to talk about that a little bit more. But let me ask you this question. What are the benefits of same-sex marriage instead of domestic partnerships? Or is there a difference?
Oh, there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is different as night and day. And to be honest with you, before I was asked to be the National HIV/AIDS spokesperson, mm-hmm. I had not investigated this that much. But there are federal laws that marriage couples, the heterosexual marriage couple, are afforded, blessed with, that domestic partnership does not provide.
It's a state-by-state situation with domestic
partnership? Well, no. It's just there's actually more benefits that marriage provides that that the domestic partnership doesn't.
Mm.
And
can you touch on some of them? Oh, just...
I have to be honest with you, I'm not as versed in this area,
okay.
But I can say that it has things that do with adopting children, things that have to do with there are
inheritance,
some inheritance tax differences, and all the things that matter to heterosexual couples who work two jobs and raise children are not given to people in domestic partnerships and even civil unions. If because there is a difference, and it's important to get that out.
Now, civil unions and domestic partnership, are those differences?
Well, civil unions are like the next step up from a domestic partnership. It's like the civil unions were like, and I admit that I personally don't have a problem with there being a difference in the name. Mm-hmm. Some LGBT people do. I have a problem with there being a difference in what's given. For example, if civil unions, and I said this years ago, were people who were in civil unions were given the same rights as people who are in marriages, it wouldn't matter to me what they were called.
Mm. Okay.
Now, this is important because the black church says, well, why do they have to be called marriages? Okay, then my counter would be, all right, they don't have to be called marriages, but give them the same rights, complete rights, as heterosexual marriages, and we don't have a problem with the name.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why the LGBT community had a problem with the name is the name meant less benefits. Mm-hmm. The name meant not full equality. The name meant I wasn't an American.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand that. Also, can you talk about gay ministers in the black church?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, we could do a whole show on that one.
No, or maybe I should have said, is there many gay ministers that's ministering to traditional churches?
Let me tell you, there are so many gay ministers in America. It is unbelievable. I mean, there's two things going on. You have a lot of gay ministers who are getting fed up with the homophobia. Mm-hmm. They're getting fed up with the gay bashing from the pulpit. They're coming out from ministries, starting their own churches. That's a huge movement in the black African-American Pentecostal movement. You see many gay ministers saying, I'm tired of this. I'm out of here, starting my own ministry. Huge. And, of course, whereas in the past there were just hundreds of gay ministers who are ministering in the church undercover. You're seeing less of that now. You're seeing, that went on for years. But you're seeing yet less of that now. Now ministers are coming out. More and more they're saying, I'm not staying with this congregation. I'm out of here. I'm starting my own church. Or they're in denominations that do accept them, and so they're okay there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, what are your thoughts on what's happening in the professional world with some of the professional athletes that came out, like Jason Collins in the NBA and Michael Sam's, who's with the Rams now, got drafted by the Rams?
Well, let me burst everyone's bubble. As many of the athletes have said, these are not the first gay athletes that's been. As a matter of fact, the more that football players are interviewed and basketball players, they're all saying, for years we've had this. It was just the same thing as the black church. Don't ask. As long as they don't bring it out, as long as no one knows, as long as they play the sports, as long as they're good athletes, that's all we cared about. But, I'm just really glad that they are coming out. Because there's still so much discrimination in schools. I'm talking about college level, high school, junior high, or middle school, as it's now called, and elementary school. And these athletes coming out are really helping to at least kind of curb some of that and stop our kids from beating up one another, killing each other, and literally shooting each other just because they're the same gender-loving person.
Well, let me ask you this. What kind of message would you have for a young person that's out there in these schools right now that's dealing with these gender identity
issues.
Problems? Yeah, issues like that, especially the one that's being abused, either
You know, this is the there is good news. When I was growing up, there was no one I could have talked to. No one I could have turned to. But now, of course, in the border, within almost in every single state, even in some of the most conservative ones, but almost in every single state, there are things that are literally in place in schools now where children can go to their counselors. You may not be able to go to your parents, but there you can go to find sympathetic counselors. A lot of the schools even have LGBT organizations within them. Find them, you know what I mean? And there are LGBT organizations in every city where LGBT people, children, young people, adults can call and get a support system. And I suggest you do, because it's a proven fact that if children are being bullied, that you know they begin to consider things like suicide, when that's something we don't want them to do.
How can the gay community get more involved with some of the major problems we have in the black community, like creating more jobs, improving our school system, and keeping our young people out of prison?
I'm going to tell you something. Yeah. And a lot of people will not like this, but it's really the truth. Saying gender-loving people are probably the most gifted, brilliant people I've ever encountered in my life. And they're great entrepreneurs. It is a proven fact, especially if you go to Atlanta, where there is the largest population of gay people live. Mm-hmm. It is a proven fact that in every city where same gender loving people move, property values go up, businesses thrive. And so what I would like to see is our community become more accepting of these individuals, because what they have to offer in every area, I could start listing it, we'd be here all night, but what they have to offer in terms of creativity, ingenuity, their genius abilities are amazing. If our community would then become more accepting, then we could, then I would like, I think the same gender people would be less afraid to help the community, because they then wouldn't have to hide. But it would be a financial blessing to the African American community, who would benefit from their wealth, from their talent, from you know, the connections that they have, which is a proven fact that heterosexuals don't often have. Now, a lot of people would say, well, how can you say that? But if you Google, you're going to find out that same gender loving men and women, their income is generally double that of heterosexual men, and that is also of couples, which is why corporations gear now advertisement towards same gender loving people, because they are so successful, they are so well connected, they are so doing so well economically and educationally and in the arts, and the list goes on.
Because I believe deeply in the whole concept of networking, of community organization networking for a common positive cause in the community. And that's why I'm asking the question is, how can this, even out here in Los Angeles, how can the gay community organizations network with organizations that might have a difference when it comes, it may have a difference of opinion on how they feel about their lifestyle, but when it comes to the common issues like improving the school systems or creating more jobs and stuff, how can we make that happen? You think you...
Well, Melvin, I love the question. And you, my life has benefited from the things that you've done and people you put in contact with me and me with them. But again, I think that what has to be the forefront, step one, is not just what we can do to bring to the community, but is the community has got to come to the understanding that you have. You have to put down the guns and bombs and say, it doesn't matter how I feel, this is the issue. And the issue is our children. The issue is creating a more stable African-American community. This is the issues. What can we do together? Now, if the African-American community is unwilling to do that, then I'm going to be very honest with you. As a same gender loving person, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for me to help assist or work with any or network with anyone when they're basically holding a gun at my back.
Mm-hmm, I know. Let me ask you this also. You mentioned Atlanta, and I wonder about why do you think that Atlanta developed with such a, since it's a huge also African-American city, some historical universities in Atlanta. Why do you think it developed like what you was talking about also as a large, one of the largest gay communities?
The largest in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Larger than San Francisco.
There is no other community in America that has the largest gay community in Atlanta. There's a lot of things, a lot of reasons for that. I find it amazing. I actually lived in Atlanta for a short time, but I find it amazing because Atlanta is in the South, amazing because Atlanta is controlled by Republicans, which it's going to change soon. Trust me. There's no way it's not going to. It is. And it began really years ago, even before I lived there, as Atlanta began, African Americans began to just be proud of being LGBT. There are a lot of states that surround Atlanta, very close. You can go right to Atlanta. So as Atlanta built up its LGBT community, the surrounding states that couldn't do that would flock into Atlanta. Do you see that?
Yeah.
The young people would go into Atlanta. Finally, after a while, many of them moved there. Of course, Hollywood seeing the potential in Atlanta. Of course, we know that Tyler Perry lives there, or at least
has.
Studio. Hollywood itself, though, does more filming out of Atlanta than Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And so Atlanta is just a thriving metropolis. It was primed for that because it was already known for being a thriving place for African American businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, when you talk about who owns those businesses,
I know.
There you go.
Big difference.
Yes, and so the wealth of the city, wealth, prosperity has magnetism.
Mm-hmm. Now, my co-host, Miss Earlene Anthony, she also have a question she want to ask.
All right.
Angel. How are you?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to see you again. You're such a sweetheart. God bless you.
You have a lot of information that we pulled up on the internet. And one of the things that really stood out to me was you were a nominee for Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no small task. I want you to talk about the area that you were nominated in, how you really felt, and how did you learn that you were a nominee? And could you have ever thought when you were growing up as a little young guy and wherever you were from, did you ever consider something of such an honor? But tell us about how you really felt.
You know, when I was younger, I always thought that I would write a book one day.
Mm.
I wrote this book, my first book, which is Love Won't Let Me Be Silent, and that's the book you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I would begin to post things on the internet, and my friends, after a while, they begin to say, "Why isn't this in the book?" And I ignored them for a year. I mean, I just said, all these people. And finally, they literally bugged me to death. And so finally I said, okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to assemble all the poems, all the stories. But, of course, that was a time when Prop 8 was going on. Mm-hmm. And so I started writing commentaries and articles. Now, I was just doing it from what I was experiencing as an African-American believer who happened to be LGBT. And I began to post these articles and poems and stories. And I grouped them together and found a publisher, printed the book, and, you know, and there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I submitted my book to many there are many LGBT publishers and things you can submit your book to. I did submit them to Lambda Literary, you know, of course, there's just so many. Mm-hmm. And then an organization nominated me for to the Pulitzer organization, and that's how I was nominated there. Of course, that's a great honor when someone thinks enough of your writings to nominate you for mm-hmm. a Pulitzer.
Absolutely.
My very first book, my goodness, you know, I was really elated. Yet, I think that what's opened more doors for me has not necessarily been the Pulitzer nomination. Mm-hmm. It's been being selected as a national HIV/AIDS spokesperson for the nation. That seems to have opened international doors, perhaps more than even my nomination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That came down from the president?
There's an organization mm-hmm. which works with Barack Obama. And through that organization and the two of them, I got this nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see so many videos where I'm talking about HIV/AIDS on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's not by accident.
That's great. Uh-huh. Great information.
Uh-huh. Okay, I want to ask you, that's where I want to go to, because I want to talk about the situation in some of the homophobic African countries like Uganda. Can you update us on that in your personal relationship to that situation?
Wow, this is huge, Melvin. And at the same time we had Prop 8, 2009, Uganda decided that they would enact or proposed a bill, and it was known all over the world as Kill the Gays Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the bill proposed that anyone who would be caught in any homosexual activity or who would be caught raping children and infecting them with AIDS would be killed, murdered, or put to death. And I'm glad you asked this question, because this is probably the most misunderstood thing globally. And let me explain why I say, and I'll do this quickly. In one of my books, I have a poem. It's called Uganda, Uganda, My Heart Weeps For You. And in the poem, I talk about one of the things that Uganda does. Now, it's important to understand that when AIDS came out, this is associated with AIDS. When AIDS came out in Africa, or became so, you know, horrific, mm-hmm. devastating, that millions were dying, heterosexual, get this, not homosexual, heterosexual men were told that if they mm-hmm. found virgins who were children mm-hmm. and slept with them, that would cure them of disease. And I'm saying, you've heard this.
I heard that. And it is true.
This is true.
On television.
Yes, and they were taking these children, and these men were having sex with these children, thinking that that would cure them. Now, mm-hmm. but the problem with this whole mm-hmm. thing is, these were heterosexual men molesting children. I want to emphasize that. Not gay men. Mm-hmm. Not gay men. And so they did what Americans do. It's a misdirected use of the law. Instead of targeting heterosexual men who were doing the offenses, they targeted innocent, same-gender-loving people in Africa and went after them. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was, I just was interviewed in San Diego about this in the Edge magazine and also the East County magazine there. And one of the things I pointed out in those interviews this month is that, this was spurred on by white evangelicals who came out of our country, some even out of San Diego, who went to Uganda, convinced the parliament, because they saw that they were losing the marriage equality fight in America. Mm-hmm. They went to the parliament and literally influenced them, and they created mm-hmm. these draconian laws, which enraged the international community, the United Nations. Recently, the president of the country, they finally signed that law, and after being fought by the international community for 5 years, it is now law now. And when we're done, we have more time, I guess we're going to take a break.
Okay.
I'll tell you more.
Oh, okay. Okay, because I know you had a personal
stake
in that.
Yes, and I'll tell you. Yes.
Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our special guest, Bishop Terry Angel Mason, and hopefully he'll also hear some of his poetry.
Thank you.
This is the community calendar of upcoming events. In celebration of Juneteenth, Drama Stage Qumran present the 101 Club, a play reading written by Judith Bowman and Melvin Ishmael Johnson, directed by Ishmael Johnson. The 101 Club is about a successful political negotiation between FDR and black leaders led to the formation of the 477 Bombardment Group in 1944. The Army Corps did everything in its power to make life for the black officers a living hell. Rather than salute and take the derogatory treatment, this group of Tuskegee-trained pilots ready for duty in the Pacific planned a mutiny signaling their refusal to continue accepting the separate but equal doctrine. Their war began and ended at Freeman Field in Seymour, Indiana. This account tells that story. That's the 101 Club. This event is being held Thursday, June 19, 2014 at 7 p.m. The location, John Anson Ford Theater on the Edison Plaza, 2580 Cahuenga Boulevard East, Hollywood, California, 968. And find your space at the Ford. This is a free event. All are welcome to attend. This outdoor event is wheelchair accessible and disability affirmative. Picnicking in the park. Bring your own food and beverages. Light refreshments will be available. Vending opportunities exist for crafts and wearable art. For other accommodations or more information, please contact Drama Stage 1 at yahoo.com, 213-908-6587, or 626-703-1230. No more time to write at gmail.com. And the Skid Row Studios will be on hand to do a live broadcast of this event. And also, this is a Roby Theater. They are co-producing this event. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to DramaStage1 at yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. And I just want to mention that we would definitely not be picnicking in the park. I don't like that term.
Sorry.
Yeah,
picnic.
We have a nice little outing. The term just, you know, go back a long way.
I know the origin of that term.
When they used to be lynching black people.
Are you going to say hello to your niece or?
She
may be listening?
Yes. I'm hoping my niece down in Atlanta, Kendra, is listening to this broadcast.
Yeah.
Would love to hear from them, both Kendra
maybe
and
call
Jay
in.
Down there.
Yeah.
Kendra and Jay.
Yeah.
But let me do this, sir. I'd like to play, before we get back into our special guest, I would like to play two clips that we had from our event last week on the talking about prison hunger strike and the shoe.
Mm-hmm. Hello, my name is Georgiana Williams. She said I got 5 minutes. Will you mind you get my size and take the time? I always cooked a lot of food because I had to That's how I got involved with the homeless.
Realize that suffering, you know, is something that if anybody suffers, man, suffering has a common denominator with everybody who has suffered. If you've ever suffered, then you can feel the suffering of other people. You know, and maybe my experiences and my suffering is enabling me to share something with you guys. I just want to share a couple things with you guys before I relinquish this microphone. And one thing that I'd like to share is food, eating, man, eating, you know. Eating is really cool. And eating out here is cool. People like to eat. When you go to jail, I can speak from experience, you know. Eating, because I've met a lot of guys that live from meal to meal, man, you know, on the main line.
That was Big Earn talking about the prison hunger strike. Now, we're back with our special guest, Bishop Terry Angel Mason. And I'm going to ask him, can you do one of your great poems for us?
Mm-hmm. All right, Melvin. I borrowed my friend's here brochure, and I did not bring my glasses. So I'm going to try to see this. This is addressing the issue of Uganda. What's the Kill the Gays Bill, now referred to as a Jail the Gays Bill. When this came out, it went viral and was played all through Africa. It goes like this. Uganda, Uganda, my heart weeps for you, for you kill, murder, and imprison the innocent. Those who express love differently in the name of the righteous one. But it is clear that you do not know him. Like America, you label them pedophiles and child molesters, yet continue to close your eyes to the true heterosexual offenders, allowing them to continually rape your children and infect them with AIDS. Men who foolishly believe that this will cure them from the pandemic. It has been said that you freed yourself from the tyranny and oppression of a king, Mwanga, who was demented, greedy, self-serving, and who defiled the people. And if these things be true, then this is good. But you forgot that even though he was said to be corrupt and accused of raping the people both physically and emotionally for years, still, we must judge each human being by their own conduct, character, and deeds, and not punish the innocent for another man's sins. Uganda, Uganda, my heart weeps for you, because even though the rain falls frequently upon your land in the south and beautiful lakes run through your northern region, they have not cleansed you from your transgressions, for you are still blinded by hatred, fear, and intolerance, and cannot see that the sun rises upon the just and the unjust, so that all men may be wooed to the Creator by love and mercy, and not by hatred and discrimination. For hundreds of years, other nations robbed you of your wealth, stole your children, and like they have done in Nigeria, and carried them away to foreign lands and enslaved them. Even today, in many nations and regions of your country, you suffer from extreme poverty because of usury and exploitation from men who lusted after your riches, saw you could not defend yourself, and carried them away to distant lands. You must be very careful, lest the handwriting of God also appear in judgment for your offenses, and likewise be written upon your walls and inscribed in your constitution, now laced with fear and intolerance, having been saturated by the influence of misguided, self-seeking American evangelists. These words that were spoken by the prophet Daniel. Mine, mine, tekel upharsin. The interpretation, Melvin. God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Mm-hmm. Tekek, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to another. Thousands of you march in your city streets to rid yourself of a sin that you say will certainly bring the judgment of Sodom and Gomorrah upon your land. But like the scribes and Sadducees or Pharisees of Jesus' day, legalism and an incorrect interpretation of the Holy Scriptures has blinded you. That's not all of it, but that's
okay. And I think we have someone on the call, on the phone. Who am I speaking with?
This is Jay.
Hey, Jay. How's you and Kendra doing?
Yeah, we're doing fine. She's being a little shy tonight.
Okay. Well, look,
but we're here.
So glad to hear from you. Do you have a question for the bishop?
No, we're actually just enjoying the show and listening to his words and. Getting some enjoyment out of it.
Mm-hmm. You guys down in Atlanta, right out from Atlanta, huh?
No, actually, we're in Pennsylvania right
in Pennsylvania.
Now.
Oh,
okay.
I just recently retired, mm-hmm. and we're planning to move to Atlanta and purchase a home there. But the good thing is, here in Pennsylvania, we weren't recognized. Our marriage was not recognized, and just recently... they passed the law, and our marriage is now recognized.
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That is. Congratulations to you, Jay.
Thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Jay, I'm sure you've been watching this. There's so much going on nationally with marriage equality until I am a columnist and I cannot keep up with it. Every single day, Jay, there is something new. I mean, even before I came here, I was reading about just literally getting off the train, Wisconsin, where of course now it is marriage equality is there, and now of course people in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, New York, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really exciting.
Okay, Jay. Hey, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. And we're listening, so keep up the good work. We love it.
Oh,
okay.
Thanks very much. Tell Kendra,
guys.
Say hi. Give love to all of the family.
Thank you guys for calling. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Now, I kind of want to open up. We still got a few minutes. Let me ask you this question. When you look at the Bible, it speaks out against homosexuality and also fornication, you know, which is sex outside of a marriage. Now, both are legal in our society. Why do you think the fornicator is looked at differently from the whole concept of homosexuality?
When I was, I think I should have been about 9 years old, a Baptist minister in Los Angeles got up in his pulpit, and he said, his son, of course, he had a son, and he got up and said, I would rather catch my son in the back seat of a car with a woman than with another man. And I thought to myself, I don't know why it's both fornication. Mm-hmm. And I told that story because it goes right along with your question. Mm-hmm. Again, this gets it's at the heart of the issue is and not many Africans view this. They'll say, Africans even will say, this is not part of our culture. This is not who we are. The whole problem, Melvin, is people think that being gay or lesbian is like taking a pill. You can suddenly make a decision you're going to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Whereas we didn't make a decision we were going to be African American. And so the real heart of the problem is this idea that you can choose to be something that God has made you to be. Mm-hmm. That's the problem, Melvin. And so they'll say, well, you know, it's natural for men and women to have sex. But see, just like in my second book, they say that I'm broken. God considers all of humanity broken. All need a redeemer.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, do you have a question or comments that you want to ask?
Okay, yeah, I was kind of curious about, like, I don't know if we call it a stigma or the fact, but why are gays more professional and well-off compared to heterosexuals? Is it wired differently in the mind or what?
This question, they just did a study about this. That's a great question. I can't answer that from a psychological that came out with a study on this.
Okay.
I personally think that it's like African Americans. You know how when we were oppressed,
mm-hmm.
We came, you know, we yeah. you know, that oppression, we had to find ways to express ourselves in gospel music and dance and whatever. And we had to find ways to overcome in spite of that depression. What I'm saying to you is I feel that depression or oppression rather, mm-hmm. oppression and suppression is like a refining fire, and it has a tendency to pull the best out of us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're winding down. Can you give me your closing comments and your contact information for those who want to contact you?
Well, it's easy, Melvin. You can put in just Terry Angel Mason. That's all you need in the website. In any Google search engine, it will bring up all my contact information. I'm on Facebook. Just put in Apostle or Bishop Terry Angel Mason. It will take you right to the Facebook page. We have a number that you can call. It's 619-573-7489. Or email me at terryangelmason@yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm. One more quick question. Is the same issues that the black community is dealing with in terms of same-sex marriages, is this the other races, the whites, the Hispanic, is it the same situation, a little bit different?
Culturally in white communities, it's not as bad. Mm-hmm. In African Americans, Latino communities, it's pretty rough. But it is getting better because many African Americans, I don't know if you saw the Grammys this year, but they had Queen Latifah did a whole thing where she married many heterosexuals and, of course, same gender loving people. And there were many African American gay couples standing there getting married. They're becoming more visible and they're standing up saying, we're here. We've always been here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Bishop Terry Angel Mason, my co-host Earlene Anthony, Bobby Buck. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report by just Googling and Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. And I leave you with the quote that opened the show, the tape, Jerry Silver talking about the prison hunger scrap.
I'm a prison abolitionist. Prisons have no place in a civilized society. How do we do without prisons? We change this society. And that this fucking society. We change it. And that's the only way we cannot have prisons. We don't need to put up with this. So anybody that wants to see the agreement to end hostilities, if you haven't read it, it's here. Then the guys in the short quarter came up with 3 points that they want people to get behind. Develop a campaign to promote the end of hostilities. Wow. If you had an end of hostilities, you would take away their tool.
Amen.
And if one of you guys said it, that is, they depend
on this. If they don't have people fighting each other, it's all over for them. Second, they want to have a powerful media campaign to expose how CDC has retaliated against the hunger strikers. They gave them good food for a minute, now they got slop again. They have retaliated against them so bad for standing up for their rights, for saying, I won't eat. How is that hurting anybody? And third, they want to have a day each month that is Prisoner Rights Day, and that's not a bad idea.